Mahabharat, Chapter 2, Pandu Cursed and Blessed. Although possessed of all material opulences, Pandu was by nature disinterested in sensual enjoyment. Having enjoyed with his two wives for only a short while, he found his mind turning to other things. Although the Kuru dynasty had for many thousands of years been emperors of the globe and had upheld religious codes, their hold over the kings had begun to slip with the death of Shantanu and his two sons. Some of the kings were now becoming arrogant, exceeding their own boundaries, and antagonizing weaker kings. Pandu felt impelled to take action. Going before Bhishma, he said, "My lord, our dynasty's greatness has suffered diminution. The world is straying from the path of righteousness established by our ancestors. Irreligion is rising. It is my duty to our noble house, and indeed to the Supreme Lord himself, to go out and check the offenders." Bhishma smiled. Here indeed was a worthy descendant of the great Bharata, after whom this very earth had been named. He replied, "Your desire befits our line, and is praiseworthy in every way. Take blessings from the Brahmins, and then leave with an army. May victory attend you." Pandu quickly assembled a vast force, consisting of infantry, horsemen, elephants, and chariots. As he left Hastinapur, he looked like the king of the gods surrounded by his celestial army. Pandu marched to the east and defeated the king of the Darshanas, who was becoming averse to Hastinapur's rule. Moving south toward Magadha, where the powerful King Dirga was assailing many surrounding countries, Pandu attacked the proud king at his capital, Rajgriha, and killed him. After that, Pandu subjugated several other warlike kings. He ranged across the globe like a fire, his far-reaching arrows and the splendor of his weapons resembling brilliant flames. As his fame spread, monarchs submitted without resistance. Soon all the world's kings recognized him as the most powerful ruler on earth. They bowed to him with joined palms and offered tribute of various kinds. After this one-year campaign, Pandu returned to his capital with the wealth he had obtained. All the Kurus, with Bhishma at their head, came out to greet him. They viewed with delight the train of elephants, oxen, camels, horses, and chariots, all laden with riches and stretching further than the eye could see. Pandu then presented to the Kuru elders the precious stones, pearls, coral, gold, and silver piled in heaps, along with millions of cows, horses, and other animals. He showed them innumerable costly blankets, rugs, and skins from the rare black rinku deer. Pandu bowed at Bhishma's feet as he presented all this wealth, and Bhishma tearfully embraced the young king. Surrounded by Brahmins uttering prayers and benedictions, the two men then mounted a golden chariot and proceeded to the royal palace, heralded by fanfare of trumpets, conches, and kettle drums. Pandu ensured that his two brothers were each given much wealth. He had little interest in personal wealth, being more attracted to forest and plains than to luxurious palace life. He loved to mount his stallion and ride out on long hunting expeditions. Thus, a few months after returning to Hastinapur, he decided to make his permanent residence upon a hilly slope of the Himalayan range. Taking his two wives with him, he left his magnificent palace and moved to a simple dwelling on the mountainside. The local people would see the monarch roaming the woods with his wives. Encased in beautiful blazing armor and armed with bows and swords, he resembled a god wandering the earth. Dhritarashtra officiated as king in Hastinapur on behalf of his younger brother. At his command, the forest people would supply Pandu with every object of enjoyment. Pandu had mastered his senses, so although he gratefully accepted their gifts, he continued to live simply. One day, Pandu went out hunting. He saw a couple of deer mating. They bolted when they saw the king, but quickly he fired 5 swift arrows after them. As the golden feathered shafts pierced the male deer, it fell down, crying. To the king's surprise, the dying deer began to speak in a pained voice. Oh, how shameful! Even degraded men who are slaves to the senses never act so cruelly. No man's judgment can ever prevail against the ordinance of Scripture. How then have you, a king, and descendant of the noble Bharata race, acted so in conflict with Vedic ordinance? Pandu stood before the deer, which was weeping bitterly, and replied, As a king, it is my duty to hunt. I thus control the forest, making it safe for the rishis. At the same time, I am able to practice the kingly art of weaponry. Furthermore, even great sages in the past have killed deer in the forest by offering them in sacrifice. O deer, why do you reprove me? The deer replied that it did not condemn Pandu for injuring it, but for not taking into consideration that it was mating. The deer then told Pandu that it was a rishi named Kendama. He had assumed the form of a deer to mate with his wife in the woods. The rishi had no dwelling and could not reunite with his wife in a human form, as people would criticize. He had therefore transformed himself and his wife into deers. The king had killed him just as he was about to beget a child in his wife's womb. Kendama continued, No creature should be attacked at the moment of intercourse. Your act was extremely cruel and sinful, and is liable to lead you to hell. It is especially reproachful as you are a king, and are meant to chastise the wicked and protect the tenets of religion. Pandu gazed at Kendama in shocked silence. He had spoken correctly. It had certainly been sinful to shoot at the deer as it mated. How had he allowed himself to be so overcome with passion? And what would come from having killed a rishi? This was a calamity. The king hung his head in shame. Seeing Pandu's crestfallen condition, Kendama said, You need not fear the sin of killing a Brahmin, as you did not know my true identity. But as you killed me when I was indulging in pleasure, so too shall you meet your death at such a time. The rishi wanted to free Pandu from his sin. By cursing the king, Kendama knew that Pandu would immediately receive the reaction for his misdeed and thus not have to suffer after death. Struggling to speak as his lifeblood ebbed away, Kendama uttered his fearful imprecation. When next you approach your wife out of desire, you will immediately fall dead. O king, as I was plunged into grief when I was happy, you shall also meet with grief at such a time. The deer then gave up its life. Pandu stood for some moments, unable to move. As he gazed at the deer's dead body, hot tears ran down his cheeks. Gathering his wits, he returned to his hut. He immediately told his wives what had happened. Afflicted by sorrow, the king wept aloud with his 2 queens. He condemned himself again and again. Holding his head and lamenting, the king spoke in an anguished voice. I have heard that my father, although born of a virtuous man, was himself a slave of lust, and died as a result. Having been begotten in the wife of a lustful king, I too have become afflicted with lust. I have become devoted to sin. My life is simply spent in killing innocent creatures. The gods have forsaken me, and I stand cursed. Pandu resolved to live a life of austerity. He declared that from that moment he would accept a vow of celibacy, as Bhishma had done. He would seek salvation by renouncing all sexual pleasure, the great impediment to spiritual understanding. Pandu spoke to his horrified wives, I shall shave my head and cover my body with dust. Sorrow and joy will be equal to me. I will entirely renounce anger, and I shall be devoted to the good of all creatures. I will accept no gifts, and I will obtain my food by begging. In this way I shall transcend the dualities of this world and rise to the highest regions, where the Lord Himself resides. The king asked his wives to return to the capital and inform his elders of the turn of events. They should gratify the Brahmins on his behalf, giving them much wealth. For his part, he would immediately retire into the wilderness and leave society forever. Kunti and Madri were torn by grief. They could not face the prospect of separation from their husband. In piteous voices, they begged that he allow them to follow his path. Both queens were prepared to accept whatever austerities he accepted. On behalf of them both, Kunti said, "Let us together accept the order of Vanaprastha, retirement in the forest. We shall be happy practicing asceticism with you. If you leave us today, we shall not bear our lives any longer." Pandu relented, but he made it clear that he intended to perform the strictest austerities. His wives were not deterred. They wished only to be with him wherever he went. Pandu resolved to embark on his ascetic life immediately. He would not return to the city. He removed all his royal ornaments and gave them, along with his riches, to the Brahmins. He then said to his attendants, "Go back to Hastinapur and inform Bhishma of everything that has occurred." The royal attendants and Brahmins left sorrowfully for Hastinapur. The citizens lamented loudly when they learned of Pandu's plight. Dhritarashtra was especially afflicted. Thinking of Pandu living so austerely in the forest, he could no longer derive pleasure from the comforts of his beds, servants, and royal opulences. He continually wept and brooded over Pandu. After the Brahmins and attendants had left, Pandu made his way into the forest with his wives. They walked steadily north for many days and finally arrived at Saptashrota, the 100-peaked mountain. There the king constructed a wooden hut and began to engage in severe penance. Many rishis, siddhas, and charanas lived in that region, and Pandu soon endeared himself to them by his qualities of humility, self-control, and devotion to his elders and to God. They would frequently visit his hut to converse with him. With his mind fixed only on salvation, Pandu lived quite simply at Saptashrota. He ate only fruits and roots and drank clear water from mountain springs. His two wives accepted the same vows he had taken, and thus all three lived joyfully on the mountain, like celestials descended from the higher regions. Gradually, over time, Pandu thought more about his situation, and one day he spoke to the rishis, revealing his fears. "O greatly learned ones, I have heard that a sonless man cannot attain heaven. By having sons, one pays his debts to his ancestors. If I die without issue, my forefathers will surely perish, as the Shraddha offerings will cease. I am thus filled with apprehension because I cannot beget children." Pandu was anxious. He would often perform the Shraddha ceremony for the welfare of his departed ancestors. The Vedas state that such food offerings made to the gods on their behalf ensure their continued happiness in heaven. Pandu was concerned. What would happen when he died? If he left no children, who would continue the offerings to his forefathers, and indeed to himself? He folded his palms in supplication. Could the rishis beget children in his wives, just as Vyasadeva had begotten him and his brothers? Smiling, one of the rishis replied, "By our ascetic powers we have seen that you will undoubtedly have children, like the gods themselves. Indeed, your progeny will fulfill the purpose of the celestials. All this can be seen clearly by us. Therefore, you should certainly act in such a way as to somehow produce children." Pandu reflected on the rishi's words. It seemed the sages were amenable to his suggestion. He went to Kunti and spoke with her in private. "O lady of sweet smiles, I desire offspring, but due to my vicious behavior, I have lost my power of procreation." In such instances, the scriptures sanction that another worthy man may beget children on my behalf. Please, therefore, accept another man and conceive a child for me. Pandu pointed out that even he and his brothers had been conceived in this way. Kunti should thus accept a qualified Brahman, who was superior to himself, in order to have a child. The noble Kunti did not like Pandu's suggestion. She looked down and spoke softly in reply. O virtuous one, please do not request this of me. I am your lawful wife, ever devoted to you. I shall certainly not accept another's embrace, even in my imagination. O king, embrace me to beget offspring. I shall ascend to heaven with you. Who is there superior to you? Kunti recited to her husband an ancient history she had learned. There was once a powerful king who had died without issue. His lamenting wife had embraced his dead body, and by the arrangement of the gods, she conceived children. 3 qualified sons were born of her union with her dead husband. Kunti asked Pandu to emulate that king. Pandu replied that he did not possess such power. He preferred she conceive a child by uniting with a rishi. He assured her that no sin was attached to such an act. It was his responsibility, as he was commanding her as her husband, and she should not hesitate to comply with his request. The monarch tried in many ways to convince his wife. At last Kunti, seeing her husband's determination, said to him, I shall tell you of a boon I received while in my maidenhood, which may yet prove to be our deliverance. When I was a girl in my father's house, he would engage me in serving guests there. One day the powerful mystic Durvasa arrived. By my service and constant attention to all his needs, I greatly pleased that rishi. As he was leaving, he called me aside and said, O gentle one, I shall confer upon you a boon. Listen as I recite a mantra. This mantra uttered by you will summon any of the celestials that you desire. Whether agreeable or not, they will then be obliged to do your bidding. Kunti had already had experience of the mantra's power. As soon as she had uttered it once and thought of Surya, that blazing deity had appeared before her. She had then conceived a son. Kunti therefore knew that she could summon other gods to produce further children. She had not wanted to reveal this secret, being reluctant to unite even with the gods in place of her own husband. But this was an emergency. It seemed that the time to make good use of Durvasa's mantra had now come. Pandu, who had known nothing about the boon, was overjoyed upon hearing Kunti's words. This was surely the Lord's arrangement. Sons from the gods would be far superior to any born of earthly men. Kunti asked her husband which of the deities she should call. Pandu thought for some moments and then said to his wife, O beautiful lady, you should call the great Dharma, the god of justice. He will never be able to pollute us with sin, and his son will undoubtedly be qualified in every way. Kunti assented to Pandu's request. She sat in meditation and thought of Dharma, reciting the mantra Durvasa had given her. Within moments the deity appeared, riding on a resplendent chariot. Shining like the sun, he smiled and said to Kunti, What shall I do for you at this time? Awed by the god's splendor, Kunti replied in a trembling voice, I desire a child by your illustrious self. Dharma at once united with her in his ethereal form, and then disappeared. Kunti conceived, and in due course gave birth. During the 8th month of the year, at noon on a full moon day, when the auspicious star Jyeshta was in the ascendant, she brought forth a lustrous son. As soon as he was born, a celestial voice was heard in the sky. This child will be the best and most virtuous of men. He will be devoted to truth, highly powerful, and famous throughout the 3 worlds. Known as Yudhisthira, this boy will rule the earth. Pandu was overjoyed. The gods had not forsaken him after all. Here was a child worthy of his great dynasty. He no longer had to be anxious. Then he began to consider the situation. He saw that by Durvasa's boon, Kunti could obtain more powerful sons, born of the gods themselves, who would ensure the Kuru's welfare and become great leaders in the world. Pandu approached Kunti again, a year after Yudhisthira's birth, and said, "The wise have declared that a ruler should possess strength as well as righteousness. Therefore, please invoke the wind god Vayu, the strongest of the gods. By him we shall get a son who will be the most powerful man upon this earth." Kunti folded her palms and bowed in assent. She again sat in meditation, this time calling for Vayu. In moments the god appeared, riding a huge deer. In a voice that sounded like a thundercloud, the effulgent god said with a smile, "O Kunti, what do you desire from me?" Kunti was bashful as she replied, "O best of the celestials, please give me a son who will possess immense bodily strength and who will be capable of humbling the pride of everybody." The god agreed, and by his yogic power he approached Kunti and conceived a child within her womb. When Vayu's child took his birth, a voice again was heard from the sky saying, "This child will be the best of all those endowed with strength and power." Pandu and Kunti were even more joyful to see their second son, whom they named Bhima. Along with Madri, and in the company of the rishis and siddhas, they lovingly raised their children in the remote and beautiful woodlands on the mountainside. Some months after Bhima's birth, Kunti was sitting near the edge of a mountain cliff with Bhima asleep on her lap. Suddenly, a tiger roared nearby. She jumped up in fear, and the baby rolled from her lap over the cliff edge. Struck with horror, Pandu quickly descended the cliff. When he reached the bottom, he saw the child lying unharmed amid a pile of rocky fragments. The baby had landed upon a large rock and had smashed it to pieces. In amazement, Pandu gently lifted his child and took him back to Kunti. Even with two sons, Pandu continued to reflect on the future of his dynasty. He thought, "Success in this world depends upon exertion, but exertion is always subordinate to destiny. Yet even destiny is controlled by the will of the Supreme Lord. How then can I obtain a son who will be the best of all those devoted to the Lord?" Pandu thought of Indra, the king of all the gods and a famous devotee of the Lord. Indra had formerly performed 1,000 sacrifices for Lord Vishnu's pleasure, and he possessed immeasurable might, prowess, and glory. From him would surely come a son who would be superior to all. Pandu consulted with the rishis and was advised that he and Kunti should practice an ascetic vow for 1 year to please Indra. At the end of that period, Kunti should summon the god with her mantra. The monarch and his wife then accepted a vow of standing on one leg from sunrise till sunset, taking neither food nor water. They kept their minds absorbed in meditation and prayed for 1 complete year with an aim to please Indra. At the end of the year, Indra spoke to Pandu in his meditation. "I have become pleased with you, O king. I shall give you a son who will protect religion and chastise the wicked. He will delight his friends and relatives and slay his foes. Indeed, this boy will be the best of men." Following Pandu's request, Kunti again chanted her mantra. Indra appeared immediately, his bodily luster lighting up the whole region. By the power of the 1,000-eyed Indra, Kunti conceived, and in time a dark-complexioned child was born. For the third time, the heavenly voice was heard resounding over the mountainside. "O Kunti, this child will be equal in strength to Indra, and indeed Shiva himself. He shall be called Arjuna, and he will spread your fame everywhere. He will subjugate many powerful kings and greatly increase the prosperity of your dynasty." Agni, Shiva, and Indra will all be gratified by this boy's service. He shall have no equal in prowess and will be famous throughout the 3 worlds. Overhearing this, as well as other prophecies regarding Arjuna's future, The rishis on that mountain were filled with joy. They uttered blessings while the celestial drums reverberated and showers of flowers fell from the sky. Many gods and heavenly sages appeared before Kunti and offered the child benediction. Only the ascetic rishis could see them as they appeared in their ethereal forms, standing in chariots and on mountain peaks. The rishis were astonished by that wonderful sight, and they stood with folded palms. Pandu was delighted. He now had three matchless sons. Seeing the wonderful result of Durvasa's boon, he decided to ask Kunti to use the mantra a fourth time and summon yet another powerful god. When he approached her again, however, Kunti refused. O learned man, even in times of emergency, it is never sanctioned by scripture for a woman to have intercourse with more than three men. Have you forgot the ordinance? I would become debased if I again conceived by another. The king fell silent. Kunti was right. He decided not to ask for any more sons, and continued to live peacefully in the forest with his two wives. Their three sons grew luxuriantly in their care. Then one day Madri approached Pandu privately. My lord, I do not complain that you treat me less favorably than Kunti. Even though I am of a higher birth, I still have no complaint. My one grief is that you have no sons by me. Madri found her position unbearable. No princess in her line had ever gone without issue. Kunti had three sons. Madri had heard that Dhritarashtra's wife, Gandhari, had given birth to 100 sons in Hastinapur. Yet she, the lawful wife of a great hero, was childless. She asked Pandu to request Kunti to teach her the mantra. Madri explained that she was too shy to ask her directly, since Kunti was her rival. Pandu smiled. He felt compassion for his younger wife. O Madri, I had already been considering this myself. I was reluctant to ask you because I was not sure how you might feel. Now that I know your mind, I shall certainly speak with Kunti. I do not think she will refuse. The monarch approached Kunti immediately. He told her of Madri's sorrow and asked her to be gracious to her co-wife. Pandu made it clear that he also desired more sons, to secure more fully the good of his race, including that of himself and indeed Kunti. Kunti assented to her husband's request and told Madri, O gentle lady, I shall recite the mantra for your benefit. Please think of some deity from whom you desire offspring. Madri thought carefully. Most probably Kunti would allow her to use the mantra only once. If she summoned the inseparable twin Ashvini gods, she would get two sons at once. Even as she thought of the two gods, they appeared before her, aglow with celestial splendor. Bashfully, she asked that they unite with her to conceive children, and they immediately agreed. They begot upon Madri two boys of incomparable beauty, who were named Nakula and Sahadev. Upon their birth, the divine voice said, These virtuous and accomplished sons will transcend in energy and beauty even their celestial fathers. The rishis performed all the rites of passage for the five boys, and they grew up swiftly. Even at one, they appeared as if they were 5 years old. Pandu was overwhelmed with happiness at seeing his son's extraordinary strength, beauty, energy, and wisdom. All the boys became favorites of the rishis, and they sported like five Gandharvas descended to earth. Pandu wondered if he might again have another son through Madri. But when he asked Kunti if she would permit Madri to use the mantra again, Kunti became angry and replied, My lord, I was deceived by that wicked woman. Although I gave her the mantra only once, she obtained two sons. If I give it to her again, I fear she may surpass me in the number of children. Pray do not ask me for this favor any more. Pandu reconciled himself to the fact that he would have only five sons, but he was not disappointed. His boys grew up like gods. They were all as handsome as the moon god Soma, and as powerful as Indra. They all became fearless bowmen, who were capable, even in their early youth, of facing furious mountain lions. The rishis schooled them in every facet of Vedic knowledge. The ascetics were astonished to see the boys growing so rapidly, like lotuses blooming in a lake. Pandu and his wives offered prayers of thanks to Lord Vishnu for their great fortune, and they went on living in the Himalayan region, raising their children with affection.